This town needs an enemy.
What are you?
I'm Batman. I can't wait to show you Lunch's toy.
That's not hello.
Do you mind?
You're the Batman.
Hello, and welcome to Rain Man Digital's exclusive Batman fan show, Wayne Talk. I'm your host, Paul, and with me today, as pretty much always, is Mr. Michael Flores.
Hello, hello.
So today, we are going to briefly recap our discussion on Dark Days Metal, The Forge, and then we're going to ideally move through Dark Days Metal, The Casting, as well as Metal Number 1 and Metal Number 2. Because that did not happen last time we tried to talk about this.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get to them, because it seems like we get stuck on like an issue and we spend like 40 minutes on it because we get all excited about it. Because that's what definitely happened with the last metal discussion.
So as far as The Forge, Batman was, well, what happened in there? What was important? We got to meet up with Aquaman. They kind of pal around. Batman, no, they don't pal around at all, actually. They're like, they're borderline at each other's throats.
Yeah.
Batman lets Aquaman know that he knows a little secret of his, so that Aquaman will keep a secret of his. They kind of move on from there. Hal Jordan is sent by, what is it? One of the Guardians of the Universe.
Yeah.
To investigate. Investigate. That's the word I wanted.
Investigate, because Bruce Wayne is apparently holding something of unknown power, something so dangerous that lowly human Bruce Wayne is harboring some type of power that even has the Guardians. Kind of nervous, shaking in their boots, which right there, that's such a great way to start an issue, because yes, we all love Batman. Batman's awesome, right? He's epic in his own way, but in the grand scheme of things of the universe, well, at least until this story,
he's a dude. Like, yeah, what is,
that's it.
And just honestly, that's part of what makes him and a lot of his villains like great, because they're just like dudes or crazy dudes or whatever. They're not all super powered, but like, what is this dude got that the Guardians of the Universe have to worry about?
Yeah, and that's just a great way to start the story, because it immediately gets you intrigued.
So Hal goes to explore the Batcave. He meets up with Duke Thomas, a longtime semi-sidekick of Batman, who finally comes into his own, really starting in this issue.
Can we call him Scrub Sidekick? Scrub Sidekick. I don't know if I like him yet. Do you like him? I don't know if I like him yet.
I want to like him so much. But the attention that he got, so Scott's been building him up for however long, and he finally kind of literally gets to shine in this issue and the following issue. Mm-hmm. And then he gets his own like 3-part miniseries that spins off after the end of Metal. And like, it was garbage. And I don't think we've seen him since. So yeah, he can be a scrub sidekick, whatever.
When you're dealing with Batman, you're dealing with such, you know, the Batman family, you're dealing with so many characters that are really interesting. So when you introduce someone new to the group, they really got to cut through. And I think with this last issue, as well as the one we're going to cover today, the casting number one, he just doesn't really cut through. And I think that's ultimately the problem.
Does that make sense? That checks out.
Yeah.
Hal meets Duke. They kind of explore. They find out that Batman has a secret Batcave within the Batcave, because why wouldn't he? That secret Batcave is filled with all of the medals he has been collecting over time. The medals that are very, very important to this series and this story, and why the story's called Metal.
Yeah.
There is also another little surprise in his Batcave, and that is the Joker, who's, you know, captured in there for reasons.
And they pose the question, like, who is this man and why is he there again? And this is why that issue is such a great way to start everything, because you immediately get the idea that the writer, Scott Snyder, is trying to position Batman against everyone else, not just the immediate threat that he's tracking down, but even his own allies, because we already know, and they stated in this issue here, that, hey, you know what, Batman, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you know you're supposed to clear this with the Justice League before you have a, you know, your own little personal, what, Guantanamo Bay for Joker. So it's pretty intense. It's a great way to get you thrown in.
Aside from that, they also really kind of dive into, I guess, the narrator for this this issue, the Forge, as well as the following issue, the casting that we're going to be touching on next. It's the story is being told like you are reading Carter Hall, who is Hawkman, and we have not heard from in forever.
Yeah,
it's all coming out of his journal, kind of documenting the things to come, how to avoid the things to come, worrying about. So
like the Harbinger, basically sounding that warning. Hey, don't do this, bro. Don't do what I'm doing. But I also like that they're using Hawkman, because Hawkman's never a character again I've never been drawn to.
Right.
And they're kind of reworking. And that's something we talked about in the last Metal. But one thing that I find really intriguing about this entire series is that they're reworking people's backstories without actually just retconning things. They're actually going in, digging deep, using what we know of these characters like Carter Hall and saying, hey, you remember when we said this is how he was reincarnated and how his life continued to just recycle, 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 recycle? Well, actually is.
This is why.
Yeah, this is why. It actually goes farther back. So reworking these stories to make certain characters more interesting, because just reading that issue and this one that we're going to cover today, the casting, I'm actually interested in Hawkman. And I've just never been.
So the journal entries end with Hawkman kind of following the mystery of the metals, trying to figure out what they are, what they do, what, where they came from. He takes a team into Challenger Mountain, which is apparently the source of, or at least what they were led to believe is the source, because research.
Yeah. Which is a Cadmus base, right? It turns out.
It ends up being a Cadmus base after he goes into it. And it completely disappears and the issue ends.
Yeah.
So we get to continue now from there and see what happened.
All right.
So now Dark Days, the casting, number one, just continuing from there. We've got a flashback to Carter as well as Kendra. There it is. Hawk Girl, Kendra Saunders.
Yeah.
The two of them are... They kind of formed like a secret society of various other immortals. And they were, I don't know, I guess, hey, what kind of information do you have? Because you've been alive for a long time and we want to know things too. I guess, why wouldn't you do that? Like, if you were immortal, why wouldn't you just hang out with all the other immortal people?
Right. What secrets do you have?
Get caught up to speed.
Is there a secret handshake to go with that secret group?
Probably.
Yeah.
It's probably like an entire day long too, because they got the time. But there are, I don't know, like a dozen people in that group, and they reference like the demon Etrigan. I believe they reference Swamp Thing or some variation of Swamp Thing.
An elemental of sorts, yeah.
The Phantom Stranger, the Wizard Shazam, Ra's al Ghul.
There's a lot of things that come with those names, too. A lot of mythos, a lot of... It gives it an ancient vibe, older than the world we know. So when they drop those names on us, we know. We're like, well, and damn. Like,
some of those names are like, you know, lawful good. Some of them are like very much not good. Some of them are just kind of treading the line, do what they want or need to do. So it's interesting to have them all together.
Yeah. Now, getting to Shazam just for a second here, and if I'm jumping the gun, just let me know. Now, they mentioned Shazam, that he's the one that creates the dagger that ends up being very important in this particular issue here. Now, we did a review on the movie Shazam a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned a metal and how relevant there were relevant pieces of DC canon in Shazam, that they reference various things because of the use of Shazam's lair, I guess, of sorts.
Yeah.
Is this part of that? Did I stump you?
Well, so in the movie, it got me jazzed because the it was a batarang that hit the the antagonist in the back of the head, and it like made him bleed. And I immediately thought like, one, sweet. Two, is that batarang made of some sort of metal? Does it have like the properties to hurt people that are magic or superpowered or what have you? Just because a lot of this was still fresh in my head at that time. But all of that turned out not to be the case in the movie. And as far as this goes here, I mean, the fact that the Wizard Shazam has this dagger that is like magic because he made it and he has electrical powers and the dagger has electrical powers.
Okay.
Basically, he got the metal from wherever anybody gets this variant version of Nth metal.
Okay.
And I don't think much of that gets explained too far beyond that. But it's all, I mean, it's the same as where the metal for the next weapon Batman gets that we'll jump into.
Yeah.
So Batman, all of those characters have their little meetup. They draw specific attention to Ra's want for that dagger we've been talking about that the Wizard Shazam has.
Mm-hmm.
From there, we just jump off to Batman up in Greece looking for Hephaestus's forge, because that's what you do when you're Batman.
Yeah.
And he finds out that all of the gods have retreated to Olympus and they have locked the pathway to Olympus because they fear a coming war that will douse the light of creation. So
pretty steep. It's pretty heavy.
Yeah.
I'm such a nerd for that type of stuff, because it has this whole like Greek poem vibe, which makes sense, you mm-hmm. know, obviously, and introducing the gods and Wonder Woman and handing him the weapon he will need for his journey. It has that whole Jason on the Argonauts vibe.
Right.
And that's exactly what you get in this issue. You have Batman going through these steps, going through tests, essentially, going on a journey, finding the right weapons that he will need in order to face whatever threat this is. I mean, dude, I wouldn't be surprised in an interview if Snyder has said, hey, you know what my inspiration for this whole aspect here was?
Everything great.
the great Greek poems, you know, the Greek epics, because Greek epics, yeah. It really does feel like he's pulling from that. And you say everything great. And dude, the Greek epics are my thing. I love that shit because there's just this intrigue and mystique to it, unworldly vibe in a world that's like ours, but not quite. And that's the whole feeling you get from this, the world that Snyder created with this issue, the casting. Love it.
So, you know, while he's just kind of shit out of luck because Hephaestus is gone, he coincidentally bumps into Wonder Woman, who hands him the Sunblade, which was created by Hephaestus for Apollo at the dawn of human civilization and is one of 12 weapons forged from eighth metal. Now she just happened to be given that by Hephaestus, who specifically wanted her to give it to Bruce before he turned tail and ran into Olympus with the rest of the gods.
Did we ever see that, or did they just drop that on us?
No, they just dropped that on us.
Okay.
Realistically, it could have happened in a issue of Wonder Woman that I personally did not read. So I guess I don't want to discredit that, but I am not aware of that happening on pages anywhere.
Okay. Cause that's my only, I want to say, issue I might have with this is I feel like there's a lot. They're expecting us to swallow a lot without a lot of setup. Now, when it comes to Batman's journey, and understandably, the perspective of the story is from Batman. So in that regard, the writing's just fine. But then you have those moments that they just, like Wonder Woman popping up, like, well, that's, give us a little background on that. But you bring up a good point. That very well could be in a Wonder Woman issue. Maybe not, you know, of big note, you know, but something that she had to do or hear about that we saw in maybe whatever.
And the big thing is like the Sunblade and the one of 12 weapons forged of eighth metal. That is like, none of that's a big surprise. That's all like established stuff. So really it's just Hephaestus being like, hey, give this to Batman. Like that is the thing that we didn't see happen that we're being told happened.
Right.
And I get, you know, I totally get like, it'd be nice to see that, but that's like one panel that we didn't get presented with. So, and also, in this, the Forge and the casting, their main purpose was to kind of establish all of the necessary background to then go in and enjoy Metal, you know, 1 through, etc. So, if this one missing panel is one of the things that, like, you know, you're bummed about, I feel like that's a good, we're doing well if that's one of things.
And it's not a deal breaker by any means. I mean, it's just, I was like, oh, okay. And I just assumed, because I think that most people that's either thinking of reading this or have read it or will read it, I think they kind of understand how comic books works, and everything's interconnected. It's one big, long, ongoing story. And because that's what I thought. My excuse immediately was, oh, you know what? It's probably in something else that I haven't seen. Some story, there's some rapport, there's some talk at one point about this sword she would give him. So it like I said, it wasn't a deal breaker. If it was a movie or a TV show, I'd be like, oh, foul ball. But in a comic, it's different rules.
So from there, we jump back to the Batcave with Duke, Joker, and Hal. And
the whole Joker situation.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about it. Like, what's going on with Joker?
So he was okay. So at the end of Scott Snyder's run on the New 52 Batman, Batman and the Joker, they die. They fight to the death, and they die, and they're both dead, and they die. So then the story continues. We have a brief stint where Jim Gordon is kind of this like corporate sponsored Batman, and it's interesting. It's different. But, you know, we get to the point where we need Batman back. So it turns out that the individual that was the Joker, as well as Bruce, are still alive, because the cave that they died in has Dionysium, one of the final metals that we are introduced. It's basically the purest form of what a Lazarus pit is.
Okay.
So it seeps into their dead bodies and brings them back to life.
Okay.
But they have, you know, from massive brain damage from dying and being smashed because they were in an underground cave, neither of them remember anything. They're just two new dudes.
But there's glimpses, right? I mean, isn't that what kind of drove this Joker that's trapped away in Batman's Batcave? Like, he saw glimpses of things, and he's in the know of, kind of. He's in the know. He knows that something bad is going to happen because
he has a connection to this metal from that happening.
Now, as a Joker fan, does this work for you? Because for me, I liked it, but I want to hear from your point of view. Was it okay seeing Joker? And I know this isn't the first time we've seen Joker play, you know, where the tables were turned and he was actually trying to do something good, but good for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
How did that work for you?
I am with characters like this. Like, yes, he's trying to do something quote unquote good, but he's doing it. He's trying to do something good for his own reasons. He don't want to die again.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that's in character. Like, I don't have an issue with really like any villain doing something quote unquote good if it is in their own self-interest.
Right. Because, it's about them, right?
And obviously I'm not going to spoil anything, but we definitely see another one of those like lesser of two evils. Oh, Joker's going to do this now? That's fun.
Yeah.
Later in the series. And I'm stoked about that scene.
Well, he makes that statement, which I felt like was a great, a strong statement for who Joker is, when he says, let's end this. I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have a perfect memory when it comes to this. He says, let's end this and get back to bats and clowns rather than bats and birds, which is of course, what they're setting up. Mm-hmm. So it's almost as well that he
referencing the tribes.
Yes. And he wants things to get back to him being about him and Batman. Let's go back to hating each other. Let's go back to fighting. That's where I feel comfort. That's my comfort zone. That's what I like to do. I like to torment you. You're my, you know, you're my yang and I'm the yin, you know. So I did like that aspect, but it was very interesting that
I mean, like no homo. He fully loves Batman. Oh,
absolutely. Absolutely. Maybe a little homo.
Probably full homo, but like he's basically asexual. So like,
yeah,
but I mean, that's what Death of the Family was about. It was Joker loved Batman and he was trying to remove all of the sidekicks from the picture so it could be just them.
Yeah. And I just loved him being the catalyst to explaining things because rather than them just talking it out in a narration bubble, they have Joker in his own maniacal way explaining why they can't do what they're doing. And through that form of exposition, we're understanding the story through his chaotic, you know, way of conveying that information. I just love it because it keeps Joker relevant to a Batman-centric story.
Right.
Whereas when you're dealing with larger than life, because that's what this is larger than life. You're dealing with alternate realities, essentially, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Alternate multiverses.
Yes. I mean, so where does Joker really fit in to a story like that? Well, here you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keeping and remaining true to the very DNA of Batman.
Wild card, bitches.
Yeah, I mean, it works. And I mean, and then, of course, his manipulation of the guy we don't like, the scrub, Duke.
Yeah.
And trying to convince him that. And it's what we know of Batman. We know that Batman plays people sometimes. He lives in the gray. He uses people for his own means. I feel like it comes from a good place, but that is what he does.
Keep your friends at a distance and keep potential threats very close.
Yeah. So having Joker drop that on Duke, say, hey, listen, you think you're here by chance? You know, Batman is using you. And that was a great way, again, for me to somewhat care. At least I still dislike Duke, but at least it makes him relevant in the story when you start seeing how Joker is manipulating him. And obviously he wants to manipulate him because he knows that he is important, because as it turns out, by the end of the issue, he is important. He's the very thing that can allow Batman to see the machine that he needs to what look into the abyss, he calls it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's genius. And then he has the stuff that the metal in his blood, and you find out that Batman is essentially collecting people, or at least that's how Joker phrased it. Right. People with metal in their blood, creating a new army. Is that a good way to interpret that?
I mean, basically just
people that can fight the coming danger, right?
Keep potential threats close. The Joker kind of elaborates, stating that the dude who found I guess like the first series of people that had these metals in their blood and found that they got powers from having these metals in their blood. You know, he only had so many slots on the identification tag to work with.
Yeah.
So they ended up being called meta humans instead of metal humans. But, you know, hearkening back to that whole thing, explaining that, like, that's love it or hate it, like more of that, like, hey, let's explain the past without changing it.
Exactly. I love it. Now, I have a question for you. Hopefully you can answer. Now, these people that Joker alluded to Batman collecting, right? People with metal in their blood. Does that include the secret group he's working on the DL with, the Outsiders, Black Lightning? Are those people he put together because they have metal in their blood?
At least some of them are. Okay. I honestly don't know Black Lightning's full deal, especially within Rebirth.
Uh-huh.
I don't know but I believe he is like a metahuman. And then the other people on the team, I believe, are the, like, we haven't seen them since Tynion's run on Detective ended, but they were like cool, popular characters. So they're going to pop them in here, like Cassandra Cain, and I think maybe Spoiler. But yeah, that is essentially, I mean, the original, like, you know, old school Outsiders, he formed that whole group to investigate these metals back when he was originally researching it, because this is a thing he's been aware of and trying to figure out for years now.
Okay. Makes sense. Just skip to the bottom just so that we can move on. Cause we kind of covered it all. I'm just trying to cover it all in more of a discussion than kind of step by step.
Right. So Batman ends up, Joker gets away because he does what he does, and Batman scolds Bruce and Hal because realistically, how does the Joker escape the Batcave with two dudes watching over him?
Right.
But
the Green Lantern, for one. I mean, come on, dude.
Right. I mean, you just make a big hand and like hold whoever. Like, how does anybody get in anyway? So, so we got Batman back there. He references the machine that he used basically to become Batman again at the end of the New 52 run. That was also a delightful little story in the New 52 Detective Comics 27 anthology issue that you just read.
Yes, get into that for a second. So there's this machine that he uses, right, to see into the abyss. And that machine we've seen before in a comic book. Again, which one was it?
It was Detective Comics number 27 of the New 52 because, you know, Detective Comics 27. It was an anthology issue. So it was like a big beefy boy with a bunch of special stories in it.
Which was also written by Scott Snyder.
Yes, it was.
So that's a little callback that I thought was pretty cool. And I just love how much of a Batman nerd you are, Paul, because I asked you about that machine when you walked into the studio today. I said, hey, tell me about this machine. Have we seen it before? And you're like, yes.
Let me just open my backpack real quick and hand you this thing.
You opened up a fucking comic book. Out of nowhere, like, yeah, here you go, it's right here. I'm like, holy shit, Paul, you are a Batman nerd. I love it.
So so the machine very quickly was basically Batman always needs to exist, but you know, eventually he's gonna die. He'll either get killed or he'll get old. And so this machine, theoretically in the future, Bruce sets up this system where he is cloned, and every 27 years a new clone is released. That clone is kind of put through the traumas that Bruce was put through.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah,
that is brutal. So it's like it's almost like how Doomsday is created in certain stories, where it's like the agony of always dying and then being reborn. He remembers that.
Well, so they're clones. They come out and they're basically Bruce in his prime. And they're like, hey, you know, you can live your life and be a person, or, you know, you can be Batman instead. And assuming they haven't died, the previous incarnation of Batman is there to kind of like train them a little bit. But basically, this machine puts them through all of the training, the hardships, my parents are dead, all of that, to literally mold them into exactly what Bruce was as Batman. And then they are Batman for the next 27 years. And that is just, that is eternity. That is how Bruce gives the world a Batman forever.
Yeah.
And it's super cool, but it's also like fucked up. But like, they do also get to make the choice. And because they are all Bruce, they all always make the choice. Full circle, that machine, Bruce is currently still kind of in attempts to build that machine for that future plan right now within Metal. He has used it once, but they use that machine as well as all of the metals and a little bit of help of Hal's ring and finally Duke being useful to to allow Batman to look into the abyss, kind of see where all these metals are pointing and see what is supposed to, what's causing it. And when he looks in there, he sees nothing. He literally sees absolutely nothing. And we find out that that is because everything that was in there was hidden from him, and that him simply looking into that void was the final seal being broken. And now shit's really going to hit the fan. Everything bad will happen now for sure. And that's where the issue ends.
Yeah.
Really, just generally, I loved it. I think this and the Forge were the exactly what they were supposed to be. They were perfect little, this is everything you need to know and be aware of to fully enjoy Metal. Can you still enjoy it without this? Absolutely. But are you even more gung-ho after having read these? I feel yes.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly. It's a great way to get me to spend some money. I'll say that. Because like I said before, DC and comics, Marvel, they all try to find new and exciting ways to bring in new readership. And I get it. It's a business. You got to keep the company alive. But this is how you do it. If you're going to create this big story that is going to get readers excited and want to dip into their wallet, hey, this is how you do it. Create two amazing backstories, which I thought was just such a great way to really just get the mythos of it all kind of out of the way so we can just delve right into the story. I agree. You don't need to read it to fully understand the Metal series, but it definitely gives you those little nuggets of information that helps you enjoy it that much more. So I definitely recommend people reading it. It's an A. It's an A for me. An A grade.
An A grade. That's a large egg. Now it's break time, so we'll see you in a minute.
What are you looking at, nerd? Huh?
I thought I was looking at my mother's old douchebag, but that's in Ohio.
Geek Out Saturday.
The biblical allegories that we talked about last week with the innocence, like much like we saw with the first creations, Adam and Eve, that I think definitely connects to the general theme of Westworld.
What is that, you might ask? For me, first second that happened, I was like, hey, that probably has something to do with kryptonite.
Darth Vader could not open the crystal. Kanan cannot open the crystal. Ahsoka cannot open the crystal, okay? The reason I'm pointing this out in this episode, what does the Bendu do? He takes the
starting
thing.
Starting point and an ending point, and it told its story pretty damn well. There's a couple gripes or a few little changes that anybody on the internet or ourselves have talked about, but overall, season 11 was great. I look back at season 10 now with...
Catch up on your favorite Rain Man digital geek shows every Saturday. DC on CW, Back to Tank, Weird West Radio, The Crossroads, and more. Geek Out Saturday on Rain Man Channel 001. Listen from the Rain Man digital app or tune in. Just search RM Channel 001.
It's Weird West Sunday.
Horror films were kind of shitty. There was no more thought to it. You didn't really care who died and who lived because the killing instantly started. And there was no development of the characters. And you're like, oh, it's just a gore fest and you don't really care who lives or dies. I'm here. I'm going to strap in for the next 90 minutes. I'm just going to watch random people die that I know nothing about. And that's what Tarantino and Rodriguez was trying to do differently. They took inspirations from Alfred Hitchcock.
Catch up on your favorite Weird West discussions from Mike and Clint every Sunday on Rain Man Channel 001. Listen from the Rain Man digital app or tune in. Just search RM Channel 001.
All right. Thank you for sticking around. We are now jumping right into Dark Knight's Metal Number 1, written by Scott Snyder, with art by Greg Capullo. This issue just opens right into the shit.
It really does.
We've got the whole Justice League team in space, Mongol's planet, just like gladiator battles. They have armor. Like, what was your first impression? Like, where'd your head go?
Well, first I was a little confused. I was like, what just happened? Because I came from reading I just got finished reading the casting.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, how does this flow? And then I remembered, well, those are backstories that aren't necessarily important to reading this. I'm like, all right, I'm in and it. I get it. I'll be patient. I'll wait for them to explain it. And I loved every second of it. I was just thrown off for a moment. And then after I just flipped to the next page, I'm like, this is legit. This is like Gladiator DC version. Yeah. It was fantastic.
So, I mean, we've got the whole Justice League fighting basically just for the entertainment of like aliens and people on Mongol's planet fighting like robots that, shit, I forgot his name, but the little Asian boy who makes all sorts of stuff. He made like a Batman Superman robot one time. He was in some of the animated series. It's not super important, but fighting these robots, and naturally Batman being Batman, he discovers how to beat them. communicates very well with his Justice League teammates, which is not something he does very frequently in the rest of the series.
No, not at all.
And, you know, they escape. So back to Earth time. Remember when Challenger Mountain disappeared at the end of the casting?
Yeah.
Casting? No, the Forge.
Yeah, hold on. First issue. Hold on one second. I'm gonna throw you off for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
They form into like a Voltron robot.
Oh yeah, they definitely do.
Is that a thing? Have they done that before in a comic?
Well,
in a Batman story, I should say.
I mean, so you remember, like, they each get their own little robot. They're fighting right. These robots.
Yes.
That the little toy boy made, and they're able to, you know, fuse with them when they figure out how to do that, because right. It was like a backdoor put in so that they could escape because Mongol sucks. And then, you know, Voltron, because why not? This whole story is Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo going as far over the top as they can.
Yeah.
And most of the time it's like you see it and you're like, what? And then you're just immediately on board.
Yeah.
Like it's none of it is like tongue in cheek or like this is stupid. It's all just like, damn, let's do it.
Yeah, you're so right about the whole Scott Snyder statement. Like he really is. It's like, hey, over the top. And for a half a second, you're like, that is fucking cool. Because that's how I was when I saw the Vulture. I'm like, that's a little silly. And I'm like, no, it's not. That's fucking cool. Let's see that in an animation, you know, a Batman cartoon. I'd love that. Mm-hmm. So we can really see it stand out. But yeah, dude, Scott Snyder knows how to take the bizarre and over the top and really make it work in his stories.
Absolutely. And I don't know. It's weird that it's weird that he could do that, because you see something and you just immediately want to not be about it. And then you're just immediately about it anyway.
Yeah. And I think it's because it's just the way his stories flow. They're very fast paced, mm-hmm. at least the ones I've read so far. And I feel like that works for his style, because he does give you these ridiculous moments. But then because the story continues to progress, you're like, OK, that works. And the next page is just as interesting and intriguing. What is he saying here? But he doesn't slow down. Yes, he does give you a lot of bubbles and a lot of things to read. That's kind of his thing. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's the reason why some of the people on this network won't read a Scott Snyder comic book. Shame on them, because it's like, I don't want to read a book. I want to read a comic. But I feel like that's part of the reason why he does hold your interest, at least for someone like me.
Yeah. So the League, you know, they do League stuff. They win the battle. This is all just the opening scene, by the way. Like, none of this is really even important. It's just like, hey, this happened, and be excited. So they get back to Earth, and Challenger Mountain, boom, it's back. So as the League, they go to explore it. They meet up with Kendra Saunders, who is current incarnation of her is what the hell is she? She is the like the leader of a Cadmus facility that is now within the mountain. No, I'm sorry. The mountain is referred to as Black Hawk Island, and she is the leader of the Black Hawks. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So she explains things to the League, things like the multiverse.
Okay.
And this is where the map was, right? This is where you first saw things.
Yes, dude. Fucking love it, man. Like, that is something
that they've literally got the Grant Morrison designed map of DC's multiverse just casually sitting out on a table. And I think we touched on this a bit, but who cares? What were your thoughts? How do you like you? Because you had never seen that before, right?
Well, no, I haven't until we started reading these. And fuck, dude, this is why I've quickly become a fan of Scott Snyder, because once again, borrowing from, let me just say, fantasies rather than the Greek epics. Okay, mm-hmm. He's borrowing a lot from the fantasy genre, and I feel like that's a great way to frame his style, at least with these stories. Because now you have the Middle Earth type map.
Yeah.
You know, that classic Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones, Wheel of Time maps that fantasy fans have become accustomed to seeing when they read their books or watch those movies. And essentially, you're given that in this beautiful map that explains how everything correlates and connects. The 52 universes, and then, of course, they get into the other thing, the thing that this entire story is about, which is the multi What is the multi-dark universe?
The dark multiverse also represented that I personally never really paid attention to, but it is important at the end of this story.
Yeah.
In that map is the very outermost red ring that contains everything, all of the universes within. It's basically the border of the multiverse. That is the source wall. That's important to know for the end of this.
Yeah, I like it. I'm going to post the actual – they have a map, I believe, online on DC's main site now since this came out. And I will post it on the discussion page for this show so people can take a look at it.
Excellent.
You actually learn a lot about just – if you're a noob and you don't know a whole lot about DC Comics and you're looking to kind of understand how everything connects and works, well, the map spells it out for you.
I mean, and literally anything that you like, oh, what is this section? What are the new gods? What is like, then you can jump on Wikipedia or whatever with the keywords the map gives you and, you know, be enthralled from there.
This is such a great cheat for Scott Snyder to use. Because it really explained things really fast. So you're not wasting 5, 6, 7 pages trying to understand what's going on and how everything works. No, we're just going to use this Grant Morrison map that's been around for like what? How many years now?
Like 5 to 10.
Yeah. So it really works for me as the reader, especially because there is a lot going on. I will say that. As I said, it's paced well, but it is fast paced. And there's just a lot of faces being thrown at you, a lot of characters that if you're a DC fan, for the most part, you're like, okay, I know who that is. I know who that is. There may be someone in the background that you might not know, but the fact that there's so much going on in this comic, a little moment like using that map helps to not slow things down, but helps to explain things when there's just so much being thrown at you. So it's definitely a smart writing device.
I really want to just kind of jump through a couple quick bullet points because this is it's technically it's issue one. And like, this is where shit starts happening. This is where we start getting like keys and pieces and even some answers. So Kendra, the Black Hawk Island, she lets the Justice League know that all of reality is built on matter, antimatter and dark matter. But only matter and antimatter exist within the multiverse. All the dark matter is in the dark multiverse. That's the, you know, the flip, the other side of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
Kendra lets the Justice League know about the dark multiverse, about Barbados, who is the lead antagonist. We finally have a name for that. He is a...
Yeah, explain that a bit. Barbados. We only have a couple more minutes this section, but yeah, get into who he is and what he represents. Because he's fascinating.
So he is... he's referred to as like the dragon. He's literally this giant bat god. When you hearken back to the three tribes, he is the leader of the leader. He is who the bat tribe, who Judas'd away from being the bird tribe. He is who they worship. He is their god. He is a nightmare. Like when you finally see him, and we don't in this issue, but we do in the next, he looks incredible, but he is just the destroyer of worlds. He's got all of the power of the dark matter. He is said to be summoned or channeled through somebody who has been treated with the 5 divine metals, 4 of which Batman has already been treated with, by the way. And his wagon is a Wayne, which just isn't a great thing for Batman to know.
Yeah. And he's the one. Is he the one that saw Batman? A glimpse of him. Of him during the final crisis or crisis on.
Yeah. When Batman is sent back into time and kind of working his way through.
Wait, what storyline was that? That was the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
That was the follow up to, I think, Final Crisis.
Final Crisis. Yes.
I think it's Time in the Batman, as Batman like jumping through time after Darkseid eyeball blasted him and sent him into the past instead of killing him, and he has to quantum leap his way back to the present. When that happens, Barbados sees him. He sees this character. He sees how this like Stone Age Batman inspires the other people around him, and Barbados uses that, or so Scott Snyder has written,
mm-hmm.
to build the foundation of that Bat tribe, that Judas tribe.
Everything
to build
that's
a following
happening
for him. All of this is, I mean, not technically Bruce's fault, because like, oh man, I never should have lived when Darkseid eyeball blasted me. But like, it's all because of Bruce.
Yeah. Dude, that is just some intricate writing. And that's why I wanted you to explain who he was and how far back, or at least not how far back, but how they once again use established canon to create this epic story that is kind of rewriting the rules while being canon compliant. Does that make sense? Rewriting the rules of the story of the DC storylines.
It's the thing that you are constantly saying, like every time we talk about this, we don't need a reboot if you just handle information this way.
Yeah. It's
you never need a reboot.
Stellar.
If you just reestablish or, you know, okay.
Using old elements and then just reframing it creating this villain. Barbados.
There's one more major thing that happens in this issue, and I want to jump into that with you before we move on. But they had Nth Metal at the Black Hawk Island. Batman steals the Nth Metal and runs away with it. Having this metal in his possession, Carter's journal from Remember the Casting and the Forge, it reveals itself to him. It was hidden in the floorboards of Wayne Manor, because why wouldn't it be? And upon finding it, pulling it out of those floorboards and picking it up, he turns around and, oh, who does he see? Dream from like Sandman.
Yeah.
Yep. What was your reaction with that? Because I think it was pretty unanimous. Like, oh, what the fuck?
Yes. It was a great way to end the issue. Fantastic. Because immediately wanted, you know, when I was reading these, I didn't have time to read the second issue. I was on my way to do some work and I'm like, fuck. Fuck, I gotta read it now. So it's a great way to end it, and with him stealing the metal at the end, it really is a great, I don't want to get into issue 2 quite yet, we're about to, but it's right. A great way to end it, give us a little bit of a cliffhanger and set up the entire narrative for the second issue, is kind of
Batman on the run,
Batman against Justice League, Batman breaking hearts.
Nobody is me, so they can't be trusted.
Yeah, I love it. Let's just jump into it.
All right, cool. So jumping right into Dark Knight's Metal number 2. As we stated, Batman stole that Nth Metal from the Black Hawk site at Black Hawk Island, and he's running with it because everybody's after him. And it's...
What is it for you as a Batman fan, Paul? What is it? How does it make you feel that Batman continues to just, in a way, be a martyr? Like, hey, it's me, guys. It's me.
It's interesting because he, like, the Justice League. Yeah, they're friends, especially like him and Superman. There is that good relationship. But you see in this, like, they're not family. You're not fam, guy. He's definitely drawing the line there, right? He uses the Bat family unanimously and just across the board to create all of these distractions to distract each member of the Justice League so that he can continue doing what he needs to. So like, these are the people that I trust, and you guys are pretty cool, but you know, you're not the Bat family.
I mean, dude,
you're not Bat fam.
That to me, like reading that story, just kind of, it worked for me in a big way because it hurt. I was like, fuck, dude, he just drew a line in the sand and said, on this side are the people I completely trust. And then you guys also are there. You guys are, you know, thumbs up. You're cool, bro. But guess what? I can't trust you completely. I need to do this on my own. And it was such a great way to just jumpstart this issue, which essentially is all of this. It's him on the run, him breaking hearts, literally breaking hearts. I think at one point, Superman pleaded with him. Like, dude, okay.
So
I love you. He said, I love you, man. I love you like a brother. What are you doing? I'm like, shit, that hurts.
Because he didn't even say it to Bruce.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You said it to one of the Bat family that was disguised as Batman. That's right. Oh, that's embarrassing.
It's rough.
It's such a good story, dude.
It's the length that Bruce is currently willing to go to. One, because, you know, world's greatest detective. I got to figure this out myself. I need to know what I don't know. that whole drive, but also like he knows when he figures this out, when he gets to the end, when he is at whatever this is taking him to, is probably going to be bad. And he's like also he's aware of that, right? Keep the people that he cares about out of it and away from it.
Yeah, but he just never explains himself because, yes, he drew that line in the sand, but at the same time, yeah, you're absolutely right. There, he is trying to protect them from getting involved in something that he knows is bad and something that isn't he at this point already starting to figure out that this might be his fault, right? So he's trying to he's wearing it, it's his cross to bear. Like, this is my responsibility.
I think he's got suspicions for sure.
Yeah.
And definitely by the end of this episode, by the end of this episode drawn on paper with pages, he knows full well what he has done. Everything's his fault and sadness occurs.
Well, that's, I mean, we're pretty much done with this issue, but like that's,
is there
important things to cover still?
For sure, sir.
Okay. Well, we only got a few more minutes. So.
I know. So, I mean, Batman figures out that, he inspired Barbados to execute all of this and, that he has already been treated with 4 of the 5 medals necessary for bringing Barbados to
He's been played and he realizes that.
Been heckin' bamboozled.
Which that for someone like Batman, who, you know, he's confident, you know, he's prideful. I mean, to find out that, hey, this whole thing has been orchestrated and I've been manipulated. I have not been working to stop it. I've been set on the path to get it started.
Yeah.
You know, to do it. I mean, that's the building blocks.
It's
for just a fantastic story,
and not to spoil anything, but just consistently he is. I mean, he's Batman. He's trying to save the day. He's trying to figure things out, and he either isn't aware or isn't like taking into consideration the fact that everything he does is what he does to try and stop this is what he's supposed to do to make this happen.
Yeah.
So constantly he's. Like, oh, this didn't help. Oh, this didn't like it. It's heartbreaking, like consistently.
Yeah.
But you've got.
Well, especially because, I mean, when you see everything he did, right? Trying to protect the Justice League, drawing that line in the sand, possibly burning bridges that may not be repaired. Yes, we all know it. They will. I mean, this is the Justice League and there's happy endings for the most part, eventually. But those bridges he burned aren't easily built back up, especially how he did it. I mean, it was deceitful, dude. I mean, we can call it what it is. I mean, Batman deceived everybody, whether he had good intentions or not, doesn't matter. And now when he finds out what he did to his friends and it was the wrong thing he did. I mean, that's got to be the most ultimate nut punch.
Just constantly, I need to do this myself, and just constantly finding out that was the wrong way to do things.
Yeah.
But Dream appears to him again very briefly, lets him know that in the future, you'll need my assistance. Just ask for it, and then says nothing else and disappears.
What does that mean? Do you think they're just baiting us? And when it comes to story, like, what's the purpose of that? Is it simply just to bait us, or is there relevance? I mean,
something comes of it, if that's what you're asking.
Okay.
Because something comes of it, I don't want to say anything else.
Okay. Fair enough.
So Wonder Woman and Superman finally find Batman after avoiding all of the distractions with the Bat Fam that he was doing. They finally track him down. And he's got a ridiculous plan going on. He has Hawkman's mace and baby infant Darkseid, who has been reincarnated after the events of the Darkseid War, and he's adorable.
He's
honestly
using it as a weapon, right?
He's in a little backpack, but yeah, he's trying to have baby Darkseid shoot him with the laser eyes again to send him back in time so that he can kill Barbados with Hawkman's mace.
Yeah,
and like, sure, yeah, that's a great plan. Aside from the fact that he has been misdirected, he is not in the right place at all. The Strigidae? Is that I have no idea how you would say that.
Yeah.
Strigidae?
Yeah.
Sure.
That's how I'd say it.
The secret organization that is kind of an offshoot of the Judas tribe has been bamboozling him and setting him up for the mantling, which is when the fifth medal is introduced to him and everything terrible that could possibly happen happens.
Okay, now for the bigger picture of DC, we also get some reveals on the Court of Owls and their
affiliation.
Yeah, or backstory of sorts, which mm-hmm. I think is really important to the DC world. And what are they like connected to? Which tribe are they connected to?
The Judas tribe, because, you know, fuck the bird tribe. We're owls.
I thought that was kind of cool that they even did a callback like that and brought, you know, the Corps of Owls in to be a relevant part of this story, not just, hey, we're here, but hey, we are a part of it as well.
Yeah. And it's just more of what they've always been doing. When we first find out about them in the New 52, they were hiding in plain sight, shaping and moving the city forward. And like Batman was never aware of them because, again, hiding in plain sight. And even after he became aware of them, they continued to hide in plain sight and lead him up to this point. As you know, as a part of the Strigidae.
Yeah.
I really wish I knew how to say that without sounding like an idiot.
I would say that's how you pronounce it.
Strigidae.
Strigidae, maybe. Yeah, Strigidae.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Final Metal is introduced to Batman via the Court of Owls. That occurs. And literally everything terrible happens. Batman gets teleported somewhere. We don't know where. He just literally dissolves in front of Superman and Wonder Woman's eyes. And boom, big page reveal. You get to see Barbados and all seven of the evil Batmen who are here to just wreck shit.
And we don't know much yet, but and I don't want to spoil it to, for people too much, but they all look like other
Justice League members.
Yeah, but with a little bit of a Batman twist to them.
And just for a quick taste so that they know what they're dealing with, Barbados simply touches Superman and Wonder Woman with his finger and borderline kills both of them.
That's legit.
Yeah. So how did you feel about the issue? I guess both of these issues, because we didn't do this for number one. But like Metal so far, where's your head at?
I love it. I just love the. It's very personal. It's a personal story for Batman, and I feel like those are always the best Batman stories, and for the most part, that's usually what we get. But this one, I mean, Snyder managed to really make it personal, and you know, and play on his character flaws, which I think that's just fantastic.
Well, absolutely, yeah. Because even with the Bat Family, even with, you know, close connections like Diana and Superman in the Justice League, he's not like a villain where he's totally self-centered and like all about self-interest, but like he's
flawed. He's a flawed
Absolutely.
Dude.
He constantly thinks he's doing the right thing by doing anything by himself.
Right.
And it's not always the right way to handle stuff.
Right. And that's just, you know, awesome that a writer like Scott Snyder can understand. Obviously he should at this point. He understands his character so thoroughly that he can craft an entire story, because that's what he did. He crafted an entire story around the flaws of Batman so that it feels legit and makes sense to anybody that understands Batman. You're like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. That would work, because in a lot of ways, as we've said before, Batman's kind of his own enemy in many stories.
All of this happens because Batman had to be the world's greatest detective and figure out what was going on. Like literally, if he could have just dropped this and ignored it, nothing would have happened.
Yeah. So solid story. Definitely an A for me.
Yeah. I'm excited for you to read the rest. That being said, thanks for listening. You can find us on iTunes.
Is that a question?
Stitcher, Google. It is. Yeah. Yeah. If you got to the second show, I hope you're still enjoying it, because we've got a couple more for this series. I cut myself off, so you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Be sure to add us to your favorites. Leave us reviews. Bookmark the main page at rainmandigitalmedia.com, and let us know how you feel about this, too. And you're for sure going to get that world map up.
Oh, yeah.
Map of the multiverse.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right. Cool. Thanks for listening. Love you.
Blah, 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 blah. All of that chit-chat's gonna get you hurt.
Oh, my God.